Hey, welcome to episode 408. I'm with Scott Schotten with some straight talk on entry-level technicians, tips on becoming an aftermarket trainer, and post-secondary automotive education. Now, here's a taste.
Okay, you just brought something up that messes with me a little bit. The whole A-Tech, B-Tech, C-Tech conversation.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, how are you? Welcome. Carm Capriotto here. And in a few moments, Scott Schotten and I had a very frank talk on training. He is a post-secondary instructor, a mobile diagnostician, and an aftermarket trainer with the Drivability Guys. There is something here for all aftermarket pros. Hey, let me ask you something. What are the reasons you go to Apex? Is it the training, the networking, or is it to see the cool new products and technologies? Well, in fact, that's the number one reason shop owners attend, is to see the new products and technologies. Now, be there November 5th through 7th at the Sands Expo in Las Vegas. For information, visit aapexshow.com, and I hope to see you there. Hey, I want to thank Jimmy Dinsmore, Nancy Orico Knight, Cody Gaddy, Victoria Ann Lasley, and William Lurie for their friendship on Facebook, and to Timothy Spurlock, Joel LeBron, and Jim Zotner for their connection on LinkedIn. Hey, you can find every link on my social page on the website. Hey, there's two important pages on the website I'd like you to visit. Don't forget about the AMI elective credits found on the AMI page, where you can earn elective credits for selected podcasts. And please be sure to review the books we talk about on the podcast. Visit the books page. And hey, just take a surf at remarkableresults.biz. Hey, now meet Scott Schotten, automotive instructor, mobile diagnostician, and aftermarket trainer for the Drivability Guys. Hey, Scott and I, we dig into the automotive education at the college level. We talk about the knowledge level and experience that our automotive graduates have and what their expected career path can be. You know, any seasoned technician knows where he started and what it took to get where he or she is today. That hasn't changed. However, we may have higher expectations of our new grads, and that is why each needs to have a career path set for them that includes an ongoing training program. In this episode, Scott gives accolades to our top aftermarket trainers and gives advice to aspiring trainers. We also get into the Grow Your Own Technician issue, the ABC Technician designation, and mobile as a career path. Hey, enjoy this fast-paced, no-holes-barred discussion with Scott Schotten. Hey, a warm welcome to Scott Schotten from the Drivability Guys, an industry trainer and an automotive instructor. Do you sleep at all, Scott?
Not much.
A busy guy. It was great, you know, catching up with you and talking to you about stuff. As an instructor, let's talk about how you see what's going on in post-secondary as far as automotive education and, you know, how you're doing to prepare these young men and women.
What do I see coming in and how do I prepare them? So let's talk about that two different ways. What do we see coming in? We'll tackle that one first. I think it's different in the, you know, the time we have now compared to most of the guys in the industry. Bob Hype, for example, people of that age group, myself, same thing. They did the, you know, my bike's broken. Let's change the bicycle chain. Let's fix this, make a soapbox derby car or whatever the case. They knew righty tighty lefty loosey, that whole concept. I'm seeing, and I can't back this up statistically, but I'm seeing a lot of students coming in now, young students anyway, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, that don't have that experience. And I don't want to blame it on the parents, but it was just a different generation. They don't go outside and play as much as they used to. They don't go and, you know, mess around with their bicycles and so forth. There's plenty of other examples. They're playing video games. They're, you know, messing around with their computers and their cell phones. I mean, some of these kids don't know what life is prior to a cell phone. I mean, they have no clue. So they're used to the technology. Now that's a double-edged sword because we have students that come in that might be great with computers. And given the way the industry is going, that's a definite benefit. We have students that, same students, might not be good with turning a wrench. And we have to teach them, you know, how righty-tighty, lefty-loosey, you know, to, basics, you know, the mechanical things that they didn't get experience with as a youth. Okay. I don't want to blame that again on the parents. I mean, partially it could be, but you know, at high school and moving forward again, where do we start?
Scott, let me stop you for a minute and talk about that. The current student and the knowledge that they have being total phone, tablet, you know, they had them in their hands from very, very early on in their age. What benefits do they bring to the world of the automotive because they're kind of from the digital natives?
A couple of ways to think about this. One is the whole input process output theory. Okay, that's really how fuel injection was in the 80s, right? You got inputs like a throttle position sensor that comes into a computer. It makes a decision based on map sensor, whatever else is the inputs, and its outputs are, you know, fuel injectors, transmission shifting solenoids. Not maybe not in 81, but you get the idea. These kids that grew up with computers, they understand, you know, input is my keyboard. Process is the computer and output is the printer or the screen. It's really easy to explain to students that have grown up in the, let's just say, the computer age. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but they get that concept. And that is where, you know, the industry is and where it's, I mean, it's going to get worse with ADAS and all that other kind of stuff. I mean, there's computer systems involved. So when I first started, let's take it back another decade. In the 70s, the technicians had no clue about computer stuff because it wasn't involved. They existed. They existed in other industries. And the simple concept of input, process, output was not even thought about. Now, these younger people, I'm not going to play the millennial game and you were born between a certain year and I don't even care. When you were brought up with computers, whether you realize it or not, you grasp that concept of input, process, output. And maybe you don't grasp the, a throttle position sensor or an APP or whatever the case might be, 0 volts, not 0 volts, 1 volt at idle. And when we floor it, we're at 4.5 volts, whatever the case. They don't understand the voltage part of it, but they understand the fact that it's giving an input to a computer. And then the output is the result. And it's easier to explain the computer part to a student of the, let's just say, current youth.
Do you see, Scott, that they want to know and learn the mechanical side?
That's a tough call because some do. We get a myriad of students that come in. And some of them are, okay, to be fair, I work in an area that's on the outskirts of Chicago. So I get farm kids that have been working on their combines in their family's farm and doing the mechanical stuff and changing the discs and greasing things and stuff in the wintertime so they could disc the field in the springtime or the fall. Or I'm not a farmer, so I don't know if they do it in the fall or the spring. But whatever the case, they have the righty-tighty, lefty-loosey, and they come in and they want to do their thing. But I get other students that come in and they have no clue mechanically wise, the hands-on part of it, and you need both. That's where the double-edged sword, it's a really tough question. That's where the double-edged sword comes in.
But is education, as you see it, in the curriculum that you need to teach, is it counterbalanced, if you will, mechanical, high-tech computer?
In the curriculum that I teach, that's what I can speak to. Okay, in the curriculum that I teach, the classes that I teach are more electrical, engine performance, things of that nature. I've got two other teachers at the college that I work at, and one of them does engines. We actually have a decent engine program where we can still bore and hone, and there's still some machine work stuff going on there. So there's a bunch of that going on, and then we do some transmission work as well. So we got, between the three of us, we've got, you know, all these bases covered. It's tough to answer because we try and feed all of these students appropriately the information they need to become an entry-level technician, and that's kind of the way to put it.
Scott, should we be teaching engine, boring, and all this stuff to the students that are gonna come out and go into the independent world and maybe rarely ever do it? Is it truly to understand you know, mechanical energy, the engine, the hands on the mechanical side?
I'm going to say that no, we don't need to be teaching students how to bore an engine. We don't need to be. Now, of course, there's students that are going to be interested in that because there still are machine shops out there, although they've become very slim. You know, it's an opportunity and it's a way for the school to recruit and say, hey, we're one of the schools that in the area that has this and the other schools don't. So, I mean, I understand that. And keeping those students interested is part of the tough part of this. So if they can come in, I had one student. This is probably 6 or so years ago that a very good student, by the way, is now gainfully employed. He actually went ahead and got his bachelor's degree at the Southern Illinois University. And now he is actually working in a shop instead of going off to GM or Navistar or whatever the case. But he spent $6,000, $7,000 on his 4.6 liter 1998 Mustang engine, replaced cylinder heads, honed the thing out, bored it actually, honed it, new pistons, new rotating assembly, did all that in the class. And a lot of colleges don't offer that. Now, did he come to the school that we have because we offered that? No.
Well, he took advantage of the class. He took advantage of the training. He learned a ton. But because that was on his resume, the independent shop that hired him probably said, oh, that's really great. But we need a good we need a C-tech who can become an A-tech someday. Our technician shortage seems to be grounded in other areas.
Okay. You just brought something up that messes with me a little bit. The whole A-tech, B-tech, C-tech conversation. All right. First of all, from a tech school or a college, you know, community college or something like that, employers need to realize that we are preparing students to be entry-level technicians. You can't expect them to leave a two-year program and be A-techs and flat rate everything. No way. Because I tell my students all the time, like, you know what, you're going to get in the door. We're going to give you all the information that we possibly can to get you started, but you need experience as well. So there's no way you're going to be an A-tech.
They're going to break things, Scott.
They're going to. I know it. I did.
With more than 2,500 exhibiting companies from around the world, Apex is my favorite place to see, touch, and compare new products. It's also the place to meet your existing suppliers and develop new partnerships. Even though it's big, the Apex Trade Show is well-organized and easy to navigate. Just plan to have an agenda and wear comfy shoes, as there are so many cool products, technologies, and product demos, and people to see in a very short period of time. And while you're there, you'll also want to participate in the excellent training offered at Apex. It's a busy 3 days, but well worth your time and investment. Mark your calendar now to attend Apex 2019. It's November 5th through 7th. At the Sands Expo in Las Vegas. To learn more, visit AAPEXshow.com. So is your argument for A, B, and C just because we shouldn't put people in boxes?
In some respects, that's true. But also, there's been some discussion on your shows about specialization, right? So let's say you have a shop and you have 6 technicians, all right? You could potentially have what you would consider, and I'm holding up my fingers here going quote unquote, an A-tech on steering a suspension and alignment. Okay. Now I know there's some bleed over with steering angle sensors and electronics and so forth, but they could be the best alignment person in the world, right? So you would consider them an A-tech potentially, or a high B-tech. Okay. And brakes and so forth. But when it comes down to diagnosis, this engine doesn't run right. Okay, we got a misfire going on. They might be completely lost. So how do you group that technician as, I'm an A-tech? Well, you're an A-tech in certain areas, but you're a C-tech in other areas. So that's one of the reasons I have a lot of trouble with it. You know, Bob Hype said on one of the previous podcasts that he considered himself a B-tech.
Right.
Right. And I think Pete Landry said, you're crazy. You're an A-tech. And I would agree with that statement that Bob's an A-tech, you know, and Bob has gone through all these different, you know, he's swung a hammer. He's done ball joints. I know because I worked with him for 4 or 5 years at the same exact shop. We worked together. We were side by side in the same bays. you know, but we also didn't have an alignment machine. So one thing I don't know about Bob is, can he do an alignment? I don't know. Does it matter? I don't
well,
really
Bob's
care.
A humble guy, and but he's always perpetually in learning motion too. And we never want to overclaim ourselves that we're any better than we think our peers are. And you know, for Pete, yeah, modesty, humility is an important thing, I think, in our world today. But I love your whole idea of, let's not put people in tech boxes, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. Let's put them in a master class or something. You know that, you know, you're my Asian guy. You know everything Asian.
With the specialization talks that have been going on with your show, I mean, if you have a shop that has the ability to have 4 technicians, let's just say 4. We'll keep it a small shop, but not crazy, right? You got one guy that is great with electronics and drivability and programming and so forth. You feed him most of the vehicles that, you know, fit that category. But you got this other guy that has nothing to do with that. He just wants to do alignments and ball joints and tie rod ends and brake pads. Yeah, fine. You that becomes a business management issue and a shop structure or a culture issue. That's another buzzword that's been on your show a handful of times. That becomes a shop management issue. Feed them all. But if we go back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, a career tech college or program, something like that, we try to give them a little bit of everything. And I'll admit, I do a lot of the electronics and drivability and so forth. So I push them in that direction, but you kind of get a feel for who does what. We're preparing them to go into a shop to be entry level. And entry level means you got the basic knowledge and you still need the experience. Perfect example would be, and I won't give you a specific shop name because there's been many of them. They will, because I do mobile in the area, I know most of the shops really close to me, and they will talk to me going, hey, I know you work at the college, and do you have any texts you could send me? And I usually have the conversation that goes something like this. I can send you a technician. I can say, I believe they have potential. We have the instructors at the college fed them the basic information. They show up for class on time. So hopefully they'll show up for work on time, all that kind of stuff. But you have to understand that if they're not done with the program, you're going to have to work around their schedule and they're not going to be that master tech, that A tech that you might be looking for. And if you're okay, I will send a couple of students your way to interview, and feel free to call me back and I will tell you what I think about them.
You just said, send me a technician. And here's a student, and we're all already calling him a technician. And you know what really hit me? Imagine going to a health clinic and someone saying to a college, send me one of your doctors. And they said, wait a minute. The guy's an intern. He's not a doctor yet. and you know, we've got to prepare him before he gets to you. And then, you know, he's got to intern for all these years. He's got to really get in there and, you know, make mistakes. And so I find that so interesting that we are looking for a post-secondary grad and we want to call him a technician. And I'm not saying that maybe they shouldn't be, you know, the word mechanic should be replaced with technician. But we need to go out and say, fresh, green, brand new, internish, please put this in perspective.
Green is a term I use a lot. And I mean, it kind of works both ways too. I mean, the employers want, they say they want one thing, but really what they want is an accomplished technician that can work 50 hours a week. But they're asking me to give them, you know, what I can't give them. And if they understand that, hey, you know what, grow your own is one of the terms that's come up on the show as well. That's what I'm trying to feed into the industry. And I hope most of the other automotive instructors are as well. Look, we're going to give you the basics. We're going to send you out there to a shop. And I hope you get into a good shop that is going to try and grow their own, be good mentors, help you out, share tools until, you know, you can afford to buy your own, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous when a shop asks me for an entry-level tech and then they call me back and go, this guy was worthless. Let's just say worthless. Okay, he probably wasn't worthless. He just wasn't what they were looking for. So why didn't you tell me up front that you were looking for, you know, a master tech? Because if you want a master tech, I'm not going to send you one of my students because they're not ready yet.
and they won't be ready for X number of years. In fact, you need to take this intern and make them into a quote-unquote master tech, and you may need 10 years to do it.
Yeah, agreed. Can I give you two examples? I have one student who a semester ago, and he's been a pretty good student, and he is actually employed locally. But early on, he told me, he said, "Hey, mobile technicians make bank." I'm like, "What are you talking about? They make bank?" He goes, "Oh, I know what you guys charge because my dad owns a shop and I have a mobile technician that shows up and he charges X amount of money." I'm like, "Do you realize how much time and effort has gone into the knowledge and the equipment and the subscriptions?" And he goes, "I want to be a mobile tech." And I had to sit him down in my office and say, "You're not going to be a mobile tech tomorrow. You're not. You are going to have to go through some education. You are going to have to go to a shop. You're going to have to do ball joints and tires and brake jobs and all this kind of stuff and learn all that before you can even think about going this direction."
Scott, what did he say?
I think he is kind of on board, kind of a younger guy, 20-something years old.
Can you imagine somebody being a mobile diagnostic tech and not have any hard knocks mechanical experience?
No, you've had many on your show, and there's many other ones around the country. And I would bet money, I don't know them all, but I would bet money that all the mobile techs that are out there, or 99% of them, cut their teeth doing ball joints and tie rod ends and going to training and learning, and whether their employer promoted it or not, whatever the case, they built their knowledge and their skill set to get to that point. And I'm not saying that everyone should be a mobile technician. That's like one extreme to the other. If you can't do a brake job, you're not going to be a mobile tech.
What I find out so cool in what you just said, and I think the audience needs to think this through too, mobile diagnostic technician is a career path inside the industry, but you got to invest. You can't become the president of a company, or you can't take the next move unless you've got, you know, the experience to get there.
Correct. If I could summarize, you need the education. I don't care if it's a formal education through a community college or a high school or whatever the case, you need the education to get the knowledge, you need the experience, and you move forward from there. Okay, that's got to happen. I really don't care if you're talking about mobile tech or just being a great tech at a shop. It doesn't matter. That has to be there. It's a combination of education. Someone taught me something that I didn't know, and on books and paper and so forth, and hands-on experience. Like you mentioned earlier when we were talking, I don't know if it's in the radio show or not, but breaking bolts and breaking things, right? You don't get that finesse, right? You can't teach that. That comes from experience. I had a student who is this big, big guy. Okay, let's say he's muscular, right? And they're working on the rear brakes of a Dodge pickup truck. It had drum brakes on it, and they couldn't get the drums off. And this wasn't even my class. They were in the shop, and he's swinging this little hammer at the brake drum trying to knock the thing off. And I know, looking at this guy, that you can swing a hammer, right? You got some weight. Pick a bigger hammer. Number one, that's a problem. Choose the right tool, okay? And can I say this? Grow some balls and swing the hammer. Just don't hit the lug stud. Right. So he was beating on this thing with this little hammer for like 20 minutes. And I walked up, not even my class. I walked up and grabbed a bigger hammer and went bang, bang, drums off. I handed it to him and I walked away. And I mean, it grew some respect with the students because they know I'm teaching all the electrical classes and so forth. But I grew up with all the ball joints and so forth. They can't learn that finesse.
Scott, is that common sense or experience?
In that case, I'm going to lean towards experience. Okay, I know there's a lot of things that are common sense in this industry that people screw up, but in that particular case, I'm just going to say it's experience. Another example would be like getting in a. Well, you're in New York, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Do they salt the roads up there?
Absolutely.
So there's rust everywhere. So you know what the blue wrench is? You heat an exhaust manifold bolt or whatever the case to to take it off. I've got relatives in Texas where when a Chicago car shows up in Texas that's all rusty, they all gather around underneath the car and look at it and go, oh my God, I can't believe how these guys deal with this. And I had a talk with them and said, you guys have a torch? No, we don't even have a torch in the shop. I'm like, you don't know how to heat a nut up and take this. And that's finesse. Right. You learn it from experience, because I don't think there is any college program, aftermarket program, that teaches you how to heat up a nut or a bolt correctly to remove it without damaging anything and still make the repair on the car.
Great point, Scott. Thank you. Let's go back to this education thing. I got a burning idea or question. You know, you're out there training, you're writing curriculums, and I want to have you back one day, and I want to talk about that whole building of the curriculum, you know, your perspective as an aftermarket trainer. But when we talked about niche specialties of technicians, do you see that education could ever become a specialty? Could there ever be specific... could there be, a diagnostic degree or a particular course way for that?
At the college level, I don't think so, because I think that we do have to prepare the students for any possibility and give them all the basics. Okay. If we had a diagnostic degree to really be good, and if I was to put together a diagnostic degree, I would push these guys with all the knowledge that I have and stuff that I don't have, you know, other trainers and so forth. That'd be really tough to do. And it has to go through accreditation with, in Illinois, it's Illinois ICCB and, you know, all these different, and I don't think that's going to work. However, I think that you could accomplish that on your own if you had the passion, another buzzword from the show, right? By attending training, because that particular field, the diagnostic piece of this, okay, there is training out there, and you go and you do the training. There's been a bunch of names dropped: John Thornton, Scott Manna, Ken Zanders, Eric Ziegler, maybe myself. I'm going to stay in the background. I'm going to be modest and stay in the background. Dave Scaler, all these different people that have all this great information to disseminate. And that's where you learn it. We were talking about Bryn Klein before we started talking on the phone. Where did he learn all this stuff? He dropped names. Is it John Thornton, Scott Manna? You know, and to me, that is the diagnostic degree, right? You have to continue attending the training with quality trainers, absorb the information, and okay, I won't swear, give a crap about the training. You can't just be there because your boss sent you. You have to go and have that passion for it.
Hey, Scott, have you ever gone out and done any recruiting for the college and, you know, talked to the high schools or parents and said, hey, this automotive is on fire. There's so much technology. In fact, we need all kinds of young people to join our ranks.
There's a bunch of different levels for recruiting. One of the instructors at my school does go out and talk to high schools. Actually, two of them actually go out and talk to high schools and things like that. And sometimes it's tough to get into the high schools because you have to get permission. And what sucks is some of our local high schools don't even want to let us in to talk to them. And they don't even know the program's available. My recruiting ends up being kind of behind the scenes because I'm doing mobile and because I'm running around seeing all these different people. My wife works at Lowe's and she's got employees that are, let's say, you know, 20 years old or whatever. They don't know where they're going, but we end up, you know, meeting them at a barbecue or something like that. I'll talk to them. And I've had some students that I've talked to and said, hey, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? You know, you're going to work at Lowe's for the rest of your life, being a lumber person or whatever. And nothing against that. But they're like, oh, well, maybe I could. And actually, one employee from Lowe's ended up leaving Lowe's. He became my student. And I actually talked to him on the phone earlier today about a network issue on a Dodge Ram. He called me. But he's been at the GM dealership, our local GM dealership, for 2 years after graduating our program, and he's well on his career path. Recruiting-wise, I'm always thinking about it. Do I talk to high schools? I've sat at a table at a high school recruiting thing, but the students walk around and sign their little piece of paper that says, I attended. There's, like, no interest. And that becomes an issue.
Where are most of your grads going? Independents, dealers, industry?
We have a few grads each year. I want to say between 2 and 5 that go on to SIU, Southern Illinois University, for their bachelor's degree. And they have continued on to work for Infiniti, writing service manuals, working for Chrysler, testing Y-Tech 2 before it was available to the public, working for Navistar Diesel. I mean, they go that route. A couple of those students have come back to farm country and run the shop that their dad owned and that kind of thing. The ones that don't go on to the four-year college, I do my best to place them in technical positions where they might be working at, maybe starting out an oil change place or an NTB, or they end up in some shops that I possibly respect in our area, and they work their way up and just like normal. So the school I work at, I don't think keeps track of placement very well. There's two reasons for that, okay? Placement very well, but I constantly, being mobile, constantly see former students locally working in shops in mostly independents, but a couple at dealerships. Okay. I take that back. I have one dealership. Our GM, our local GM dealership, probably has 6 or 8 of our graduates as technicians right now. One was a service writer, the rest were technicians. So we place in both places, but I want to say, short answer, independents is where most of them probably go.
Earlier in the broadcast, Scott, you talked about, you know, our young kids and the things that we did, you know, fix the bike, and our parents wanted us out of the house. You know, are we parenting the right way today? What can the parents do to get our kids up to a level that they want to work with their hands and find a skill?
I don't want to bash parenting, because every parent makes mistakes. But I'll tell you what, I'll give you from my perspective, right? None of my children went into the automotive field. However, I did with my son when he was 8 years old, took him to work. I bought a Pontiac Transport that busted a camshaft in half. This was probably 10, 15 years ago, 12 years ago, something like that, and put a junkyard engine in it. And he was there with a 3/8 impact tearing apart the junkyard engine while I was pulling the other engine out of the car. And it's things like that. Just expose them to it early. In the same case, I got to give my wife a lot of credit too, because all of my children, all three of them, I'm extremely proud of. They have gone on. One's an engineer. One is almost done with college, and he's doing geography, environmental studies, and a GIS software for mapping and so forth, and things I never would have expected I would have done. But where did that come from? That came from the early ages of, you know, hey, let's read books every night. Hey, you came home from school. Instead of sending you off to do whatever, let's make sure you get your homework done and have a snack, and then go upstairs and you go outside and play and do, you know, just be involved as a parent. And even though you might not understand, I mean, my oldest daughter came home from school and she's showing me the math problems that she was doing. And this was still in high school. And I'm looking at this. I'm like, this is not a math problem. This is letters and slashes and Greek things. And I have no clue what you're doing.
But Scott, who's out playing outdoors today of any young kids' peers?
As a parent, you have to do that as well. I was never a big sports guy, but we told our kids, you have to do something. You have to do something extracurricular, music, a sport, or something, right? And they've gone through the different sports. I had baseball for a year, soccer for a couple of years. You know, all three of my kids played a musical instrument for a few years, different instruments, but they did. But, you know, we didn't force them, but we made them do something extracurricular. I'm gonna pick on my son again. My other kids, if they listen to this, they're gonna be jealous because I keep talking about my son. But he recently went to a class and they were talking about some woodworking, which has nothing to do with his degree. But no one at his college in his class knew what was going on. And he raised his hand going, yeah, I know what a jigsaw is. You know why he knows what a jigsaw is? Because he liked skateboarding, which I did when I was in high school. And we built a quarter pipe in our garage. We drew out a 7-foot radius. We made the coping. We cut it out with a jigsaw. We screwed it together. And I incorporated him in that project. right? So the hands-on stuff was there, but that's because a parent, in this case it was me, a parent did it with them, right? Let's go outside. Instead of playing those video games, let's go outside and you know what? You like to skateboard? Let's build a ramp. You like to bicycle? Well, let's build a bicycle. Let's, you know, whatever the case, put them to work. Feed what they want to learn. And if they don't end up becoming a mechanic or a technician or whatever the case, you know, that's their choice, but give them the opportunity.
Thank you for reminding me and all of us of our parenting duties. When I think about what the kids are going to become today, the world of gamers, I mean, there's probably not a lot of job openings for gamers.
Yeah, well, guess what? There's drones and the military.
Oh, that's going to be
huge. If you're really good with video games and you end up in the military, you're going to pilot a drone. You know, I mean, there's application for that. So maybe you're good with video games. Maybe you'll be great at diagnostics. I mean, but maybe not good at a brake job because you don't know righty tighty, lefty loosey. It's kind of the whole all encompassing thing. Give your children or your students, you know, all the tools they have and let them pick their passion. Passion is, again, a buzzword, right? And I think a handful of people that you've had on your show, Eric being one of them, he was ready to quit the industry. Myself, I did advertising design and fine art before I joined the military, and I fell into auto mechanics. I didn't start working on cars until I was 20 years old. Okay. I went through all that other college stuff before that, right? I didn't know what I was going to do. So it's tough taking an 18, 20 year old kid and going, hey, you want to be a mechanic? Yeah. Maybe they don't know yet. You know, they have to find their place, you know, and you just foster the ones that have the passion. You can see it. If you teach long enough, you can see when that particular student has a passion for it. When they're going, oh, what is vision? Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what? I could pay my way to vision. Like, guess what? You are going to apply for the scholarship and we're going to try and get you there. Oh, you know what? If I don't win the scholarship, I'm still going to pay my way to go. You know, a one semester college student doing that, dude, I'm all over it.
Great insight, Scott. Thank you so much for being here. Would you come back and let's talk about your other career as, you know, as a trainer and how you develop curriculum?
I'd be happy to come back for that topic. I think that's a topic that hasn't been discussed yet with a lot of people. Bryn Klein and the Trained by Tech guys were talking about becoming trainers. And Bob Greenwood mentioned something at Apex about, you know, is there a way that a trainer can teach a trainer, or who is going to replace the trainers and so forth. And I can't say that I am the answer because I'm not. But I can provide my input. I can say, you know, here's what I did and here's how it worked for me and give some tips.
Yeah, I'd love to have that. In fact, you know, what him and Eric talked about in the Apex interview was it was titled In Praise of Trainers. And Bob's challenge was who's going to replace, you know, and he went around the room. Who's going to replace Scott? Who's going to replace Eric? And the fact of the matter is that no one's, you know, hell, who was I talking to the other day? They said, when you're 30, it's almost 10 minutes away and you'll be 50. I mean, the way time flips so quickly today. And it's profound think that we have to have and open that dialogue in the industry.
First of all, a replacement trainer. No one is going to replace John Thornton, and I think anyone listening to this program is going to agree with that, okay? But I would like to challenge people that want to be trainers, don't replace anyone, be yourself, okay? Take things from the trainers that you go and see. Take the good points and make notes. Take the bad points and make notes, and make sure that you become yourself, because there are other trainers that joke around all the time, and that may not be copacetic with all the people in the classroom. There are other trainers that swear. There are other trainers that don't swear, period. There are other trainers that, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different ways to look at it. And again, this is a topic for another day. When you're a student aspiring to be a trainer, you are in a class for the technical perspective, but you should almost have a separate notebook keeping notes of, you know, what did this trainer do that I liked? What did this trainer do that I didn't like? And don't plagiarize and don't try and be that particular trainer. Just take notes and model yourself maybe after some of those traits, but be yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Modeling is cool, especially if you're not duplicating, but modeling, and you end up finding then your own unique style and your own personality. And, you know, George Mencher came on, has done two episodes with us, and he's got some great advice on training. And so I also recommend that everyone listens to George Mencher's episode. Scott Schotten, Drivability Guys, industry trainer and automotive instructor, thank you so much for your perspectives. It was bright and enjoyable.
I enjoyed myself, Carm. Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to our next discussion. Maybe I won't be too talkative.
That's your role.
I'll let you ask more questions and I'll talk a little bit less.
That's okay. Thank you, man.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.